Where Murder Meets Mystery contains graphic and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, girlfriends, let's take a walk down the street where murder meets mystery, a podcast exploring the murderous, the mysterious, and everything that lies beyond the beyond. I'm your brother in mystery, Trevor.
And I'm Grace.
And she's our sistery and sistery nunnery.
Sistery and mystery.
Yeah.
She's your sistery. Oh, yeah. Man. And you're my birder and murder.
Birder and murder.
Yeah. Oh, man. How are you, Trev?
Well, on this fine Tuesday night, I'm great. It's been a long week. Had a lot to do at work that I won't bore anyone out with, but it's been a good time. Last night, we went to a college basketball game. Mm-hmm. And then while we were there, it was kind of fun. They lost, didn't really matter. But there was a guy who was just nasty. He's just dropping little nasty bombs the whole time, you know?
Oh,
and it's like, you pay for these seats and you can't move. But it smelled like if a toilet had bed sores. Just straight up disgusting, like death, like just like old people, but mixed with like dung.
Did he sit next to you?
He was somewhere. We couldn't necessarily pinpoint it. It would just come over us in waves.
And oh, God. Every
and
time
Scarlett
he
was just
his
like
legs.
Gagging. I guess. Scarlett was just gagging, which then makes me laugh. So I was just laughing at inappropriate times.
That's gross. Fuck.
Yeah, it was nasty.
Right.
But either way, I'm not ragging on this guy for smelling bad. I'm just ragging on the fact that we couldn't move because.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, when you're at a sporting event, you pay for the tickets, and you just hope that you don't get like a guy with a big hairdo or a lady with a big hairdo sit in front of you, or just like the tallest individual in the entire world that sits in front of you, or the kid behind you that like kicks you in the back of the head, or you know what, a new one, Fear Unlocked, stinky poo poo, uncrossing legs, stinky fart man. We were referring to him
I'm
as.
So sorry, that sucks.
We were referring to him as Stinky Papaw because it had to have been old because it was just tinged with, like, dust. So it really stung. Really stung the nostrils.
Gross, man. You couldn't tell, and like, when you went up to go to the bathroom or something, you couldn't tell, like, when you walked past them? Like, where the stench got stronger?
No, and it would just kind of waft out of nowhere. Like, no one walked down the stairs because we were right next to the aisle. So we were like, it must be someone walking past.
Yeah.
But we couldn't tell because, you know, people walk up and down the aisle the whole time, but it would wash over us random times when there was no one passing us.
So it was like it's probably someone behind you, and every time they moved, it just like drafted.
Or it was just someone's breath, and every time they just like yawned or burped, it was just like wafted, but it didn't smell like a burp.
That's disgusting, man. Oh, I'm so sorry.
It smelled like death and then toilet.
Whoever was sitting next to him, if you're listening, I'm sorry for your loss. Because that sucks.
At this, nondescriptive college basketball game, if that was you, you know, or you sat beside him, God help you. And honestly,
if you know.
It would have been a cool moment. Like every college game or event you ever go to, you just bring deodorant or a washcloth and some soap and you just whip it out. Of your pockets because you can't bring a bag in, and you're just like, yo, man, you need to go handle that grundle.
Handle that grundle. That's Old Spice's new slogan, man.
Like, just go in, grab a handful of toilet water, shove it up there, take some shampoo, just all the wrong things.
Yeah, and get an STI in the process. Fuck.
An STI like from toilet water?
Yeah, let me go ahead and wash my genitals with toilet water. That's a great move.
Yeah, but like more dogs
especially
would have
from
herpes
a stadium,
on their lips
from a
if they...
stadium toilet. Blech. Excuse me.
Well, I'm not talking about you have to touch the toilet, but like if you just get some water from the basin, and you're saying that you could get STI from the toilet water, then I would say
well,
there'd be a lot more dogs with
how
herpes.
Are you gonna How are you gonna scoop in there?
With your hands?
Yeah, then you're going ham with your hands on your shampoo.
You go buy a souvenir cup and you just ladle a little bit of it out, you know what I'm saying?
Ladle? Yeah, go borrow a souvenir cup and a ladle.
No, I'm saying you're using the cup like a ladle to kind of ladle
how about
the soupy
you just get
toilet
a
so- water.
How about you just get a cup and fill it with the sink? The sink water is cleaner. Unless
you can do
you're
that,
in Florida. Don't drink the Florida tap water.
The last thing you want to do in those bathrooms is fill a cup up with water and then take it with you into the stall.
What really, the last thing I want to do.
You want to keep up appearances.
The last thing I want to do if I'm washing my grundle in the middle of a basketball game, I've got other problems than what people think of me.
Yeah, like that's how your dog has herpes from drinking the toilet water.
Yes,
like that should be first on your mind if that ever happens. Just why is my dog's snout so bumpy? Well, it's all the STIs in
the toilet water. Does Tilly drink the toilet water?
She gives it a long stare. Like sometimes she'll crane her neck over it and just be like, "What's going on here?" And then it's just like, "No, Tilly, don't stare at it too long. It'll tempt you."
She's like that scene in High School Musical where Zac Efron stares at his reflection and splashes it.
Splashes the toilet water and has herpes on his hand for the rest of the movies.
Not herpes. I meant like a bacterial one. Isn't herpes fungal?
Dude, I don't know, but like I that was the first thing that came to my mind. So
it literally doesn't matter. Let's move on. It's fine. I'm fine.
Grace is like, let's stop this. Well, Grace, how was your week?
My week kind of sucked. It's fine. It's whatever. It doesn't matter. Okay.
Hey, that's
move
fine.
On. We move on.
Everybody has those days, weeks, months,
forward.
Years. Yep.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
And now 15 minutes in, we can get started. My notes are long today.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So last week I covered the brutal murder of Faith Hedgepeth, a 19-year-old college student from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And I talked about a few key pieces of evidence. The first one was the 911 call placed by Faith's friend and roommate, Karina Rosario, after she and another friend, Marisol Rangel, walk into Karina and Faith's apartment to find Faith bludgeoned to death, okay? By the way, I have a few things to say about some of the pieces of evidence that I discussed last week that have come up in my research, so I want to mention those. So the 911 call... we were confused last episode, Trevor, meaning I, and then I confused you, about how in the 911 call, Karina says my bedroom, but then the police report says they found Faith in her own bedroom.
Right.
And what I found out since then is that she and Faith share the apartment, and it's a one-bedroom apartment, so they share a bedroom.
Right. So it's both of their bedrooms.
So they're both right. Yeah. Yeah, yep. Exactly. The other piece of evidence that we covered was the note, which was scrawled on a biscuit bag and placed next to Faith's body, police believe, after her death. And the note read, "I'm not stupid, jealous, bitch." Or, "I'm not stupid, bitch, jealous. Do not open, dead inside."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Okay.
Peach Bacardi bottle.
Uh-huh. We also have the supposed butt dial the night of the murder from Faith to her friend Yuna that some believe may reveal an argument between two women, one of whom is believed to be Faith. Quick note about this voicemail. I just found this out when I was researching that for this part, but the call was actually timestamped a little after 1 a.m. when Faith and Karina are still believed to be at the nightclub, The Thrill.
Right.
However, many speculate that due to a potential glitch in the phone software, it's possible that the call was actually placed later, more specifically in the middle of Faith's murder.
Why does phone software be glitching?
So there are some people that think this because it would explain why there's only a single male profile, but why Karina's behavior is so suspicious. They're thinking that Karina was there when Faith was killed. And so they were trying to figure out a way to place her at the scene. And I think that this to people made the most sense. I don't know. I think it makes more sense to just believe the timestamp. That makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
But there are some people that think it was glitched because the original voicemail was actually Yuna thought it was a butt dial. She deleted it. And then the next morning when Faith's body was found, Yuna said, oh shit, and called her cell phone provider to get the voicemail back. So that's why some people think it was a glitch. Yeah. I don't know. Gotcha. But it's worth mentioning. One person who substantiates this theory is the forensic audio expert that police bring in to analyze the call. He states that on the call, he can hear two women and two men arguing. All he asserts is that one woman sounds angry, threatening to kick the other woman's face in, which was also what that one Reddit user said, the one I read last week. The angry woman is referred to on the call as Rosie, which we later find out was a common nickname for Karina Rosario. According to this one expert, another name comes up on the call, Eric. Okay. Now, I don't know if you remember, Trev, in part one, I talked briefly about a guy named Eric Tekoi Jones. You remember that?
Yeah.
He was Karina's allegedly abusive ex-boyfriend against whom Karina had an order of protection. Many people assume that that Eric from the call is the same Eric, which I don't think is too far a leap, but I'll get to this later and why it may not be what it seems.
Right.
Also, this is all to say that the voicemail still sounds to me like a bunch of nonsense, even after reading the various transcripts and theories. So all of this is a stretch, in my opinion. And the police also agree. They say it's nonsense. When the voicemail, along with the forensic analysis, are released 2 years after the murder, the court of public opinion goes wild with speculation, most theories centering around Karina and her ex-boyfriend, Eric. Faith's family largely supported this theory. So like I said last week, I'm going to talk largely about the investigation, but before I do that, I do have a disclaimer to make about the Chapel Hill police. What I'm learning more as I research this case is how unusual the police's behavior is during the investigation of Faith's murder. I mentioned last week that the police were strangely reserved in their releasing of information about the case and that hundreds of documents containing key pieces of evidence, the autopsy report, the voicemail, the note on the takeout bag, the 911 call, and the fact that police had the DNA profile of a single male suspect, were not released until 2 years after Faith's death, which is highly unusual. The DNA profile had been formed using DNA found in semen on Faith's body, the note, and on the pen believed to have been used to write the note. It's worth noting here that local news source Chapel Borough has reported that DNA was found on 52 pieces of case evidence and that these samples were cross-referenced with over 200 different DNA samples to rule out suspects.
Wow.
And they had no match. So.
No match?
No match.
Also, now, why is there just semen everywhere? The pen, the bag, the crime scene?
DNA doesn't have to come from semen. It can be touch DNA. It can be skin cells. It said that
they found semen on the pen and everything.
No. They formed the profile using DNA found in semen on Faith's body, the note, and on the pen believed to have been used to write the note.
Important commas. Yes, I understand now.
I don't think it does semen found on Faith's body, the note, and the pen. No, it's my fault. I'm just realizing what you're talking about. The semen was not on the pen and the note. The semen was on Faith's body.
I was like, that's it got everywhere, man. Jesus. Go wash your hands, my man. But also, like, don't kill anybody. I don't know.
So many things wrong. So, no. DNA was found on 52 pieces of evidence, but the semen was found next to Faith on the bed and on her body.
I'm tracking. Go on.
Okay. Now, go on. Uh-huh. Now, there's one pretty widespread theory that the police may have mishandled the investigation in the early days. And we do know for sure that following the collection of evidence from the crime scene, police didn't search the apartment or the woods behind the apartment.
Oh.
And we know that for sure.
Okay.
So when that information was released, it was 2 years too late to really do anything about it. And any evidence would have been washed away. But that's one theory about why the police waited so long, was not just keeping the information close to the vest. They were trying to cover up their tracks. That of the fact that they mishandled it.
Right, cover up their mishandling. I get it.
Yeah, I'm sure there were a number of factors involved, but it is quite unusual, and that's worth noting as to why this whole investigation was dragged out way longer than it needed to be. I think a lot of that is due in part to the police's hesitation to release information.
Noted.
Suspicion about the police's handling of the case only deepens when we learn that the police placed the information I mentioned earlier under seal, which typically lasts 45 to 60 days for court documents. But they regularly renewed the seal for 2 years, which leads many to suspect that this was covering their tracks. Whether that be mishandling, negligence, crime scene contamination, we don't really know for sure. But that's one theory about why they took so long. But because of the police withholding of crucial information, the investigation, as far as the public can see, doesn't really begin until 2 years after the murder in 2014. Yep. Yeah.
So that's weird. It doesn't actually, they don't actually start, looking at evidence and trying to put things together until 2 years after?
Well, they do, but the public doesn't know anything about the case for 2 years. So as far as the public sees, the investigation doesn't start until 2 years after the murder. Because,
See.
Yeah, the police were working during that time, but they weren't sharing any of their progress with the public. So as far as they knew, the case kind of went cold.
Okay.
In the months following an investigation, at least within that first year, things like the autopsy report, a lot of court documents, things like that are released to the public. That's considered public information, especially if the suspect is still at large. But
unless they seal it like they did.
Right. Unless they seal it. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Typically, police and media want to work together. And police want to give media some things because the media speaks directly to the public, whereas the police speak through the media, typically. So they want to make that working relationship, but the police weren't giving the media anything, which meant the public was pressuring the media, so the media pressured the police. And it was only after that pressure was happening that they released the documents in the first place.
Okay.
So I don't know how long the police were intending to keep that information secret, but who knows? Frustration among the public was such that a columnist named Thomas Gasparoli, I think is how you say it. He actually started a blog to keep the case in the public eye during those 2 years because he was afraid it would slip through the cracks because no one was talking about it. And in a college town where there's so much turnover in population, people aren't really the people who were in Faith's class have graduated already. You know, so no one's really keeping her memory alive or the investigation alive. So, yeah.
Well, 2 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And when it comes to these cases, for it to be out of the public's eye.
Yeah, exactly. So Faith's father, Roland, even hired a PI during that time, a guy named Hunter Glass he's wild, by the way. I'm going to link the 2020 video. He's so funny. But he carried out his own investigation with a partner. And he believes that the murder stemmed from an argument between Faith and Karina that started before the interaction at the club, but then they headed to the club that night. And he thinks that that's what we heard on the voicemail is them fighting. And that's when the argument came to a head. Now, Hunter Glass worked the case for free, helping the family to actually obtain an autopsy report, which they had not been given. The PI had to ask the police to get the autopsy or the courts to release it or something like that. The delay in
not only holding these things from the public, but also the victims' families and stuff.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Faith's cause of death wasn't even released until I want to say January of 2013. And that was because Faith's mom released it to the news. Weren't releasing her cause of death, and the mom thought it should be public information, so she released it to WRAL, or the Daily Tar Heel, or something like that. So wild. The delay in progress causes significant frustration among those who knew Faith, and the only real information we have is the fact that Faith was bludgeoned, which was released to a local newspaper by Faith's mother, and police would neither confirm nor deny the cause of death. The other piece of information that's public before the 2 years are up is a potential profile of the killer. 3 months after the murder, the FBI Behavioral Analysis Unit was actually brought in to investigate and develop a criminal profile because the police were having a hard time narrowing down suspects. And I'll talk to you in a second how many persons of interest they had. The profile said that Faith's death was not random nor an accident. The killer likely lived nearby Faith. The killer had made comments about Faith's death to someone else, meaning like they didn't directly confess, but they had made, they maybe talked about it a lot, about her murder a lot. And the killer would likely show too much interest in the investigation. The reason they think the killer lived near Faith at one time is because this was clearly someone who knew the building. He wasn't just opening random doors.
Okay. You know what I mean? So he knew how to get in and get out?
Right. Now,
or knew specifically where she lived.
Right. Now, what I'm about to play you isn't really related, but it does have a guy from the 2020 special. But I just thought that, okay, I want you to listen to this guy's voice, Trev, and I want you to tell me what his who he sounds like. Okay? He sounds like a celebrity, and I want you to see if you can figure it out.
Oh, no, I'm bad at this.
Look at all of these head injuries and think about how they were inflicted. You're talking about being as close as you and I, hitting you in the head with a bottle. You're looking at me, I'm looking at you. You can't get much more personal than that.
Any guesses?
Steve Carell.
Yes! It was Steve Carell. And this guy, his name's Brad Garrett. He's a former profiler, okay?
Yeah, two first names?
He comes in to explain the profile given by the BAU. But the reason I played you that clip is because I first discovered this guy when I was doing my research for Vanessa Guillen back in episode 13. And I will stand by this until the day I die, that if voice doppelgangers are a thing, this guy is Steve Carell's voice doppelganger because they sound identical. Identical. Excellent. And I'm keeping that clip in because school friends tell me if I'm not like mistaken. Insane. They sound identical. I don't know what it is, and it's such a weird thing, but I don't know if voice twins are a thing, but it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Now, in the days and weeks following...
Hang on. Yeah. Or Brad Garrett is basically just doing a Steve Carell impression all day,
the whole
every day.
Time.
Yeah.
Talking about this poor murdered girl, he's doing an impression of Steve Carell.
Right. Good he timing. Just goes home. He takes his belt off, you know, hangs his jacket up, untussles his hair, puts his pajamas on, and then he sits down, takes a deep breath, and then he speaks to his wife, and it's just not the Steve Carell voice.
It's just his normal voice. So this is just a persona he adopts when he's out in public, when he's out and
takes
about.
Takes off his prosthetic Steve Carell nose. That helps mold his... How was work today, honey? Oh, you know, it was fun.
It was fine. It was fine, baby girl.
Do you want some tea for your voice, honey, so you can do it again tomorrow?
Yeah. Watch him sound like Mr. T or something. Okay. So back on track. All right. In the days and weeks following Faith's murder, police offer a $40,000 reward for information, but none comes forward. WRAL interviews this unnamed source about a potential motive to kill Faith, which was one of the big unanswered questions. Like, who would do this and why?
Right.
Now, this unnamed source says that she was the sweetest person in the world and that whoever did this deserves to burn. Those are his words. He adds that he can't think of a reason why anyone would want to harm her. All that WRAL releases about this source is that he used to live with Faith when he was dating her roommate. Sound familiar?
Yes, it sounds familiar.
Okay, who does it sound like?
Steve Carell. Or are you just going to cut me out for this part?
No, I'm going to leave the Steve Carell in, but I want you to get with it and understand that it's Eric.
Henry Tekoy Jones or something. What's his name?
Eric Tekoy Jones.
Erich Tekoy Jones. Got it.
Just say Eric.
Eric.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Not Steve Carell, silly me.
Had moved out of Karina's apartment, but he had moved into one in the same complex despite the protective order and came out of his apartment the morning Faith's body was discovered and had only nice things to say about her to the waiting news cameras. His social media accounts were active the night before Faith's murder, wherein he posted on his Facebook asking for forgiveness for something he was about to do.
Oh, yeah. Wild.
At this stage, there is a lot of frustration from the public that Eric is not being more closely examined, and the police are unwilling to even confirm Eric as a person of interest. But the public suspects Eric of involvement because of the alleged threats against Faith, his involvement with Karina, and this interview with WRAL, which aligns with what the profile says about the potential killer being too, inserting himself into the investigation. Because he didn't have to come down and say anything. Right. He didn't have to come down and say anything, especially about someone who he didn't like. Right. But he came down, got his face on camera and said nice things about her. And it's like, that's inserting yourself in the investigation. That's what's going on. And so that's what the profiler said, is that they would show an avid interest in what was the investigation. It's not until the seal on the records is broken 2 years later that we learn that the police not only have DNA, this was not yet public knowledge, but that Eric, along with Brandon Edwards and Jordan McCrary, I mentioned them in part one, are all ruled out, none of them matching the DNA profile. So I'll say something.
So we've started to cross some people off the list at this point.
Right, including Eric. He doesn't match the profile. Now, one police representative tells ABC News, however, that this does not rule them out as being involved in other ways, but it means they do not match the DNA profile. So just because they don't match the profile, that would mean they're not guilty of the rape, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're not guilty of involvement in the crime somehow.
Right. Sure. Okay. I get it.
Because technically, because of the burden of proof and the way it works in the American court system, you have to prove that someone is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and confirming that their DNA doesn't match the scene, it's only worth ruling them out if you have someone who does match the DNA, right? But you can't 100% rule someone out until you know who did do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Everyone's still like a suspect, sort
of. Innocent until proven guilty.
Right. They just might not, they may be the less likely of all the suspects until they find the suspect.
Yeah. The PI team that was hired by Faith's father, including whatever his name is, Glass. Henry Glass? What's his name?
Hunter Glass.
Including Hunter Glass. Believe that Brandon Edwards, who, if you remember, Brandon Edwards was the guy that got the text from Faith's phone that night when they got back from the club. He got that text saying, "Hey, B, can you come over? Karina needs you more than you know." That text. And then he replied 3 hours later saying, "Who's this?" Yeah. So Brandon Edwards was an ex-boyfriend of Karina's and a mutual friend of the two girls. And according to Hunter Glass and the PI team, Brandon Edwards remains a person of interest. He was ruled out as the killer, but at one time lived with an ex-con with multiple arrests for assault on a female. They even noticed that there are handwriting similarities between this roommate's leasing application and the note on the bag. The handwriting expert and forensic document examiner believes the handwriting is a possible match as well. There's a photo on the drive. So what you're looking at is handwriting from Brandon Edwards' former roommate, who has a violent past. He filled out a leasing application at the apartment complex, and the handwriting on the left is from the leasing application. The right is from the note. So when they had a forensic document examiner go over these handwriting samples, he believed that it was worth looking at more samples. Now, handwriting analysis is not an exact science, but this was one thing worth noting. Now, as far as I know, police never looked into this guy because they never named him as a suspect or even a person of interest, but they weren't really releasing any of the people of interest that they were looking into. So we really don't know where this goes, but this is something that I figured was important. So I just am including it, but we don't know who this roommate is. We don't know what this guy's name, or what his connection to Faith other than through Brandon Edwards. But I thought it was important because of the handwriting similarities. But
yeah, the handwriting is definitely similar.
Yeah. And that's all that Brad Garrett / Steve Carell is willing to admit, is that this roommate could be a suspect, but he doesn't think investigators should hang their hands, he doesn't think
hang their pants on the wall. Doesn't think the investigators should take their pants off at any point. What am I saying?
He thinks that the investigators should keep their pants on.
Yeah, well, they probably should.
He doesn't think that the investigators should hang their hats on the handwriting sample, considering there's no clear connection between this ex-con and Faith. So that's okay. That's why Hunter Glass thought Brandon Edwards should be a person of interest, not necessarily a suspect, because the DNA rules him out as a suspect, but not as a person of interest. That's what I was kind of explaining earlier.
Right, leave him in until you find the killer.
Exactly. Now, all this doesn't really compute specifically about Eric, right? I mean, Eric seems like a slam dunk to me, but police maintain that because of the DNA, there is not enough to make an arrest or consider him as anything more than a person of interest, okay? Police are keeping Eric on their radar because they do believe that he knows who is responsible.
Okay.
They do think that he knows who it is. And remember, ghoul friends, that while all of this speculation around Eric is happening, Faith's father, Roland, remains adamant that Karina is the key to the case, having suspected her involvement from the beginning. And he's not the only one. Thomas Gasparoli, that columnist I mentioned earlier, he suspects the same thing, reminding everyone that Karina never mentions Faith's name on the 911 call. And Karina and Faith's neighbor, Joy, the same woman I mentioned in part one who heard the thumping noises, she suspects Karina too because of how Karina was so calm when the paramedics got there. And she said she walked out plain as day. It did not look like she had just walked out of, you know, like it didn't, you would not have been able to tell she just walked out to finding her friend dead because she seemed so calm and like together. One thing worth noting here is that because Karina left the door unlocked in the early hours of September 7th, the man who raped and killed Faith Hedgepeth could technically be anyone. Now, if we listen to the profile, right, we know that it's not likely that it was a stranger, but what I'm saying is that the suspect pool was huge because we really didn't know. In a college town, people are in and out of this apartment complex all the time, especially in the middle of the night. So like it could have technically been a stranger. Like it's possible that the profile was wrong, but profiling is not an exact science, but it's pretty accurate usually.
Right. And until there's, you know, a good bit of evidence or something that points otherwise, it could very well be anyone if we're talking about things that are in the realm of possibility.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, that being said, police have since released a composite sketch of the potential killer based on his DNA profile, and it's on the drive, Trev. I also included a photo of Eric Tekoy Jones just for reference. By the way, this technology that they use to do this is so fucking cool. I want to hear what Trev says first.
So they did that with the DNA?
Yeah. So with the DNA, this is called phenotyping. With a DNA sample, they can predict hair color, eye color, skin color, freckling, face morphology, and ancestry. Based on this profile that they've come up with, the killer has olive skin or darker, brown or hazel eyes, and most likely black hair. The consultant for ABC News says you typically see this phenotype in Latino males. The report says with certainty that this killer was not a white person, not a black person, and was definitely Latino. Which rules out Eric Tekoy Jones, who is black.
Right.
So Eric has two things going for him. Yeah.
Pretty interesting, but I wonder how accurate this phenotyping is.
I don't know. They showed the percentages, like with 88% certainty, they can say that he had little to no freckles.
Gotcha.
Which was interesting. So like they can give a certain, it's pretty darn certain. And this has actually been used to solve thousands of crimes because it's a relatively recent science, but it's so cool. I thought it was so cool. So at this point, even though Eric is the primary suspect in the eyes of public opinion, specifically in his relation with Karina, the investigation is kind of at a standstill at this point, because once the composite sketch is released, there's really no major leads that are happening. Part of the reason why this investigation was so complicated was because of the sheer number of suspects. I mean, you're talking about a man Faith's age who lived near her, who knew her, With Faith being as popular as she was and having as large a social circle as she did, along with the setting of the murder on a college campus, police have since reported that they interviewed over 1,800 suspects or persons of interest in their investigation.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. I mean, it's... Yeah, because, I mean... That's and the door was unlocked and everything else. It's like the possibility of it all.
Yeah.
And also having to have the, like, with to prove without a shadow of doubt who it was. It's crazy how there's just not enough evidence.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, they could link a number of men to Faith, but many of them refused or were reluctant to provide DNA, making it difficult to narrow down the suspect pool. And at this point, they don't have reasonable enough, reasonable cause to get a warrant for these men's DNA because they don't have reason enough to suspect them. You know what I'm saying? It's just that they're connected to Faith. So they're trying to get with consent all these DNA samples. Now, because the men close to Faith were tested for DNA, it is more likely that the killer was actually outside her circle of close friends and was more of an acquaintance. Because once they narrowed out the Eric Jones and the Brandon Edwards and the Jordan McCrary's of her circle, they were able to then say, okay, it's more likely someone she knows of, but isn't like close with.
Right.
From here, the case pretty much goes cold, and this is unbelievably frustrating for friends and family. And the police are just coming up empty again and again. And again, they kind of go silent at this point. They're really not sharing anything. And this goes on for 9 years.
Oh, that's awful.
Awful. I mean, imagine what that feels like, you know? So
yeah, and then like being kept in the dark so long as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I mentioned this goes on for 9 years. This changes on September 16th, 2021, a little over 9 years later, when police hold a press conference. At this press conference, they announced that they have identified a suspect and made an arrest in the murder of Faith.
Oh, wow.
The man responsible is 28-year-old Miguel Enrique Salguero Olvares. And police say they can link Miguel to the paper bag note, the semen sample, and a palm print found on the liquor bottle.
Oh, wow. Okay.
According to Chapel Borough, Miguel was arrested in Raleigh on August 16th, 2021 for driving while impaired. At this DWI traffic stop, Miguel's DNA was obtained without his consent. I'm not sure what this means exactly or how problematic that is, but according to WRAL News, the police will not confirm how the DNA sample was collected exactly, but we just know it wasn't. He did not consent to the collection of the DNA sample.
But he was arrested or something. Maybe he was in some sort of custody. Or they had probable cause that he fit the demographic for the case or something. I don't know.
There's enough Latino males and it's been with 9 years, like unless he looked exactly like the composite sketch, you know, but he was 19. Right. He would have been 19 when he was.
It's sad that it is without his consent, but if it's this much of a match, honestly,
I don't know. Well, they didn't know that until they had his DNA. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm interested to see how this shakes out.
What I'm thinking too is that with a DWI, I'm guessing they breathalyzed him. Is that something you can get DNA from, like breath droplets? I would assume so, but I'm not saying that's
or the DNA left on the breathalyzer with from his lips and saliva and stuff. Maybe
that's what I'm saying, but I don't know unless they just had a record of like what we learn later is that he was a person of interest. In the investigation he just was one of many. So police weren't really releasing his name because he wasn't a suspect yet. He was just a person of interest. I don't know if they interviewed him. We'll find this out in years to come, but I'll kind of explain what goes on. So he failed to make his court appearance following this charge of the DWI, and a warrant was issued for his arrest on September 7th. So had he appeared in court, he may not have been caught. Which is pretty crazy. So a warrant is issued for his arrest on September 7th. Eerily enough, the 9-year anniversary of Faith's death. September 7th, 2021 is when he was arrested. Doesn't that give you chills? Exactly 9 years later.
It's a wild coincidence.
Yeah, it is. Later warrants issued on the 16th allowed police to enter his apartment in Durham and seize 6 cell phones and a laptop. When police were able to use Ancestry DNA to match Miguel to the single male profile in the Faith Hedgepeth case, because I think this is routine, they run DNA samples of people who have been arrested. They run them against cold cases. I think this is like routine.
Like if you buy the Ancestry DNA, then they automatically run
you. Yeah. Right, like cold case, yep. And I know that they found it through a distant relative. So the whole thing with the DNA at the traffic stop, that may not have even been relevant, because if they caught him through like a distant relative, according to WRAL. So a third warrant was granted on September 30th to confirm whether Miguel's palm print matched the murder weapon. Now, it was a match to Miguel's left palm. I don't know if he was left-handed, but it matched his left hand.
Okay.
Investigators hope that the cell phones and computer will confirm that Miguel was holding on to memories or communications from the crime 9 years earlier. Faith's parents appeared during... Yeah, right? Like, or he was talking about it or whatever. I know.
Yeah, some sort of correspondence, hopefully.
Faith's parents appeared during the news conference announcing Miguel's arrest. Also from Chapelboro, quote, Durham County District Attorney Satana DeBerry's office filed a motion to Superior Court on September 28th, 2021, marking it as seeking a non-capital punishment for the alleged crimes, meaning they would not seek the death penalty. This actually lines up with the Durham County DA's past, because during her first year in office in 2019, the district attorney did not seek the death penalty for Craig Hicks, who was the shooter in the Chapel Hill student shootings in 2015 of those 3 Muslim students. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So Craig Hicks was the shooter, and a lot of people were pushing for the death penalty, and the Durham County DA did not push for the death penalty. So this was kind of in line with that. And I think this was a controversial decision. Now, Miguel is held in Durham County on a first degree murder charge and is being held without bond. Frustrating, and not unlike the case in 2012, the police remain tight-lipped regarding Miguel's investigation. There is little information known about how Miguel was connected to Faith Hedgepeth, and the investigation is still ongoing, with the Chapel Hill Police Department asking the community for patience. That being said, it appears that Miguel was on their radar from the beginning, and that's literally all we know.
Wow.
Isn't that
shitty? On the radar from the beginning, but like he seems like kind of like a long shot if it took 9 years.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So one of the investigators hired by Faith's father, this guy Hunter Glass, says he was not surprised that an arrest was made, and he believes more people could face criminal charges. Glass says he knew of Miguel, but Miguel was not on his list of suspects. So he had heard his name before. He had come up in the investigation. Okay. He believes that Miguel may have come in contact with Faith at the club earlier that night. As for the other arrests, Glass believes are imminent. Quote, personal opinion, I think there is more to it than that. I think Miguel was involved. That's obvious. I think at the same time, we will find out there were more people involved in this.
Wow.
So he thinks that this is like kind of like there's a conspiracy, I guess, is how you would. So there a number of classmates were involved. Now, there has been some speculation that Miguel may speak little to no English. I'm guessing this was a conclusion drawn from the initial court appearance, but Glass doesn't buy it. He doesn't buy it. If Miguel had spent time at the Thrill, this is not a Latino club. Glass believes that he knew enough English to have a social standing in Faith Circle. If not, he's fluent.
Okay.
So that was a random fact. I don't know what that means, but... the murder of Faith Hedgepeth remains one of the most horrific crimes to occur in this college town. Faith's father, mother, sister, and brother have nothing but good things to say about Faith. Faith Hedgepeth was loved by all who knew her, and she had such a bright future. She died way too young and was not done on this earth. As is the case with any investigation that goes on as long as this one has, it is so important for us not to lose sight of that. Don't get carried away by the sensationalism of true crime, girlfriends. I know we laugh on this podcast and deliver this information in a dramatic way, but this stuff is real and dark, and these are real people who did not deserve any of the violence they suffered. This case really struck a chord with me, and I think that's why I spent so much time on it. Faith was dedicated to her tribal community and planned to return there after graduating from medical school to work with children in that community. Regardless of the fact that this crime was not committed in a tribal community or on a reservation, as Crime Junkie reports in their episode on this case, Indigenous women are 10 times as likely to be the victim of a violent crime, and 4 out of every 5 Indigenous women will face violence in their lifetime.
That's a crazy statistic.
Yeah. I truly hope that information is released soon regarding the investigation of Miguel Salguero Alvarez and his connection to Faith's murder. After so long, her family and friends deserve answers, and Faith deserves justice. There is now a Faith Hedgepeth Memorial Scholarship Fund, which helps Native American women from North Carolina from a North Carolina tribe earn a higher education.
Wow. No, that's crazy. It's honestly wild that there's even the talks of it being like a group thing, or like there's more people that are slightly responsible for it. And I hope that they catch everybody.
Yeah. I think the reason this case really resonated with me is because of how long, and I think unnecessarily long, the investigation was. I mean, for them to go that long without narrowing it down, it just seems crazy to me. And I can't help but wonder that if they had released that information earlier than 2 years after the murder, if the public could have helped in that way. I mean, the public can be a source of misinformation and panic, but it can also be a source of helpful information. And then while they're waiting for tips, but they're not giving the public the information they need to be looking
for. How do you get tips if you don't give people a little bit to go off of?
Exactly.
Meaning like, there might be people out there that know something that would tell police because they're innocent, or that they know something, any details, but they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a lot of information released about the timing and everything else.
It's like all you know about the case is what you're seeing online or in the media. And if police aren't releasing that information, you don't know anything. You have nothing to go off of. So I can't help but wonder if it would have been solved years earlier, even in the first 2 years.
Yeah, speculation is one thing, and I don't know if we'll ever know, but at least they're making strides in it now, is what it seems like. Hopefully we'll have some sort of conclusion to that case.
Everyone just kind of, I don't know, just have a moment. I'm not going to say moment of silence, but just a moment of reverence for Faith and other people her age and younger and older who have lost their lives unnecessarily. It's just like, it's so sad. And this case really just like broke my heart. So I'm looking forward to a detox after this one. I think I need it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully I can provide that, but honestly, very interesting case.
Thank you.
Super tragic, but hopefully something comes from that case sooner than later.
Yeah, I hope to have updates for you guys. I'll have to let you know when that happens. But Trev, please tell me you have a funny one today.
Yeah.
Really?
So we're going to learn about a cryptid today, and the cryptid's a little wacky.
Okay.
It's from the wacky, insane wonderland of West Virginia. And it is from Braxton County.
Okay.
And it's basically the Flatwoods Monster, otherwise known as Braxy, the Braxton County Monster, or the Phantom of Flatwoods.
Whoa. Flatwood Monster?
Yep. You ever heard of the Flatwoods Monster?
Never.
It's another Appalachia legend.
Sounds like Steve Carell.
It's some sort of entity that was reported to have been Steve Carell. Well, callback. Shit.
He's also
that went right over my head. He's a whole entity. Yeah.
I was gonna say, I'm like, he's just ignoring my joke. Is it because I ignored your Steve Carell joke?
He's a celebrity.
Yes.
For sure.
Wow, I can't say that. Okay, go on. So entity.
Yeah. So the Flatwoods Monster is an entity that was reported to have been sighted in the town of Flatwoods in Braxton County, West Virginia, on September 12th, 1952. So we're going back to the 50s, but there was a bright object that crossed the night sky, and we'll get into that a little bit. But essentially at 7:15 p.m. on the night of the 12th, 1952, two brothers, Edward and Fred May, and their friend Tommy Heyer. Yeah, so
their last name
two brothers,
Edward
May and Fred May.
You said Edward and Fred May. I was like, what is Fred May? What kind
Fred of Fred May is one of those just wonderful West Virginian names.
Yeah.
It's local to the area. Like, hey, there goes Fred May.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, Edward and Fred May, and who?
Aren't you friends with Fred May and them? Fred May, get out there and till the fields.
Fred May, get your ass back in this house.
Fred May, eat your freaking dinner. Fred May.
Fred May. Okay. Who else? Right, yeah, Edward and Fred.
Edward, Fred, and Tommy. Tommy Heyer. It's spelled like H-Y-E-R, so it's higher. I don't know how to say
higher,
it.
As in a higher power.
Yep. And so Edward, Fred, and Tommy said they saw a bright object fly across the sky and land on the property of a local farmer who we'll call G. Bailey Fisher. So we'll call him Mr. Fisher. G. Dot Bailey Fisher. I don't, there's a lot of people that don't go by their first names for some reason. But we'll go Farmer Fisher. Which
Farmer
is
Fisher.
May seem a little counterintuitive because, like, why doesn't he just fish? But it's Farmer Fisher.
Farmer he's, Hunter
he's
Fisher?
Multi, right, he multi-talented.
Hunter Fisher.
Hunter Fisher, Farmer Spy.
What was the Farmer Hunter Fisher. His name's Hunter Fisher.
No, it's Tinker Taylor Soldier Spy.
Nice. Yes. That's where I was going.
Right?
Good. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
So the boys, after they saw it land on the local farmer, Hunter Fisher, Bailey Fisher, G. Fisher, after they saw it land in his property, the boys, you know, Tommy, Edward, and Fred went to the home of Kathleen May, which I think is probably Ed and Fred's mom, because it's Kathleen May, or I don't know, maybe it's their older sister. I don't know.
Or
but they told their story of what they had seen.
Or her name is Kathleen May. Like Kathleen May.
Oh, yeah. So Fred May, Kathleen May, Bailey Fisher May. Yep.
Hunter Bailey Fisher May. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Hunter May, Bailey Fisher May. All the Mays. So they told her the story. It was like, yo, like there's a bright object across the night sky. It looked like a meteor. Let's go find it. May then jumped in the car, accompanied by the three boys, or grabbed a bunch of flashlights and left the house. I'm not quite sure. Accompanied by the three boys, May, meaning Kathleen May, and they picked up a couple more local ruffians, local children, Neil Nunley and Ronnie Shaver. Awesome names. And then, you know,
Shaver, I barely know her.
Shaver's a great last name.
It's very interesting.
So they picked up two more boys, and then smartest decision, West Virginia National Guardsman Eugene Lemon. So Officer Lemon.
What are these names, Officer Lemon?
Yeah, you think I'm making it up, but it's real.
Do.
It's the Flatwood Monster, right?
Did they call Officer Pineapple? Deputy Tangerine. Sorry, I'm sorry.
No, they quickly informed Mayor Lime.
Good.
Yes, all the citrus.
Deputy Commissioner Mango.
Yeah, and they stopped into Clementine's coffee shop or some shit.
Oh, I love it. Okay, please continue. I'm sorry. I won't interrupt you,
no,
I promise.
Good.
I know you hate it.
No, go ahead. I don't hate it. It's called banter, my friend. Anyway, so they, you know, gathered up the posse with the National Guardsmen and all the local riffraff, and then they went to the Fisher Farm in an effort to locate whatever the boys had claimed that they saw fly across the sky at that point, because they were like, it's like a end of the rainbow kind of thing. No, it landed on the farm. They were very sure about it.
Yeah.
The group, or posse, as I was referring to them lovingly, reached the top of the hill where, you know, Neil Nunley said that he saw a pulsing red light. So imagine like cresting a hill and looking down the hill and just seeing something like glowing.
No.
Kind of like in a crater. Lemon said, as in West Virginia National Guardsman Eugene Lemon.
Yes. Okay. Got it.
Don't get it twisted. Lemon said that he aimed a flashlight in that generation and momentarily. I don't even know what he said.
Erection. aimed a flashlight in that. A flashlight.
He aimed a flashlight in that erection, and then our episode turned into smut in a fan fiction. And well, friends, you're in for a treat. Hope you're not riding the bus home, nursing a semi. All the cool friends in unison said, "Shit, I gotta hide this." Did he say fleshlight and erection? Oh God, I gotta go to the bathroom.
Fred may tuck that son of a bitch.
Yeah. Fred May, give me a hand with this. It won't go down. It's been more than 4 hours, Fred May. Okay. Anyway, I don't know how to get back on track. Girlfriends, this is not the fanfic episode.
That'd be so funny. You can submit your fanfic at. Let's get famous enough where someone writes a fanfic about us. That'd be so funny.
Yeah, there you go. Girlfriends, you can submit your fanfic submissions at wheremurdermeetsmystery@gmail.com.
Yes.
And you might get featured in an episode if it doesn't make us throw up.
Right. It has to be fun, like so bad. Like, make it like a fanfic where it's got terrible.
Yeah, honestly, I don't want a serious fanfic about, like, all you know about is just our voice. You have to make up all the rest of it.
And if you're gonna write a fanfic about me, give me Gal Gadot's body. That's all I ask.
Make me 4'6". I want to be waist height to Gal Gadot at some point. Anyway,
Trevor wants to be Kevin Hart in the fanfic.
Oh God, rip to Kevin Hart. Hope he's not a girlfriend. He'll take offense to that.
All right. Well, him or Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah. Let me redo my bullet so it's not erotic.
Flashlight in that direction.
So, Officer Lemon, which sounds like a bad porn actor. Officer Lemon.
You have the right to remain sexy.
It gets worse. My double downing is done. All right. Bullet time. Okay. Ready? Officer Lemon said he aimed a flashlight in that direction of where they had saw the pulsing red light.
Yeah.
And momentarily saw a tall, man-like figure with a round, red face surrounded by a pointed hood-like shape.
Ugh.
Go ahead and pull up the photos on the drive.
Yeah.
So, we've got Officer Lemon's description. Grace, can you get look through any of those and give me?
Why'd you call the folder P?
I meant to say pick, but the E key is so far away from the I that I don't know if I can play this off.
P. P. Okay. piss would have been even close. Like, it would have made more sense, but P.
The name folders P.
It looks like, I don't know, it looks like one of those little tiki dolls. What are those called? You know, the ones with the hair?
Troll dolls?
Like that? Trolls? Kind of like a troll, but it's specifically tiki. Like, if you ever see those tiki themed things, they have these little dolls that have like hair. That's what it looks like. It does kind of look like a troll doll. Like a demonic troll doll.
As you scroll through all of those pictures, though, like, I think one of the themes is like alien, but what are you getting?
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Like the kind of like the big, bulb head and like the glowing eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. Which would coincide with like a flash across the sky. Maybe it was a UFO that crash landed.
Right. Okay.
So all I'm getting at from this is like the Flatwoods Monster description's basically varied.
In
an article for Fate magazine, which sounds like a great magazine, probably better than Highlights, based upon his tape recorded interviews, UFO writer Gary Barker described the figure as approximately 10 feet tall.
Ugh.
With a round blood red face and a large pointed hood-like shape around the face. So kind of like the Ace of Spades.
More like the second picture. The second picture.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eye-like shapes which emitted a greenish-orange light and a dark black or green body. So kind of crazy looking.
Weird. Okay. But this isn't a guy who saw. This isn't a guy who saw it, right? This is a guy based on what, like, what's Gary? What's his name? What's his name? Brad Garrett, Steve Carell,
Gary Barker. He's a UFO writer.
So, did he see it, or is he writing about someone else's encounter? Okay,
maybe he's collaborating all of everyone's accounts. Yeah. You just take a sip of water. I hope you can really get that down.
Collab.
And it's bubbly.
I don't think either of the words you use were right. Collaborating. Oh, you're saying he's taking everyone's work and putting it together.
Or he compiled them all together.
Compiling. Mm-hmm. I think that's the word you were looking for. Yes, compiling.
Or corroborated with everyone's stories and came up with like one thing.
Yeah. And you said collaborating.
Collaborating.
Yes. Okay. Got it.
May, well, I don't know if this is Kathleen, Edward, or Fred May.
Okay.
But they described the figure as having small claw-like hands, which, I mean, same. Clothing-like folds, which, you know, same. And a head that resembled the Ace of Spades, which is what I mentioned earlier, which is, I thought was interesting. A head that resembles the Ace of Spades. I just thought that was weird.
I don't know. So,
like, some sort
of
like pointed head or headgear.
I think it's any spade symbol, like that little, like.
Yeah, it's just the suit spades. I don't see the ace. Yeah, the Ace of Spades really doesn't.
I don't know why Ace of Spades. Yeah, okay.
It's just resembled like a spade on a card from cards. According to the story, when the figure made a hissing sound and glided towards the group, Officer Lemon, which we love, screamed and dropped his flashlight, causing the group to run away. Make sure I enunciate the A in flashlight.
He screamed.
Yeah, so apparently, you know, the figure hissed and glided towards the group, almost kind of like mechanical, like maybe it released steam and was like floating towards them, which is interesting. Same. He was like, I'm out. National Guard, to hell with it. I dropped my flashlight and we just start running.
Our tax dollars hard at work.
I know. A couple days later, on the 14th of September, news clips from the Charleston Daily Mail started coming out, and where the group said they had smelled a pungent mist, which was not unlike what I was talking about in the top of the episode. It was also thick mist of just nastiness. So I sympathize with the Flatwood Monster ciders here. And some while later, because of the pungent mist, they were nauseated.
Yeah.
Which, some while later, everyone was nauseated in the entire Coliseum. So.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. We love callbacks. It's great. The local sheriff and the deputy have been investigating reports of a crashed aircraft in the area. So apparently there's tons of reports of other people who had seen the flash across the sky. However, they searched the site of the reported monster, but heard, and smelled nothing.
Semen on the pad.
So no pungent mist here. It had dissipated.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
So, the next day, here's another wonderful name, A. Lee Stewart Jr. Wow.
Okay.
Of the Braxton Democrat, which I imagine is probably a magazine or a newspaper or something.
Yeah.
Political newspaper, even. So, claimed to have discovered skid marks.
Sorry.
Big sneeze.
I didn't. Yeah. No, I just had a cough. Okay. Skid marks?
Skid marks in the
Officer
field.
Officer Lemon's pants.
I guess so. Yeah, honestly, he probably needed to wear his brown pants after the way he dropped his flashlight. But yeah, so this Mr. Lee Stewart Jr. apparently had discovered some skid marks in the field. and an odd gummy deposit, which the guy in the Coliseum could have had an odd gummy deposit somewhere on his person, and we all had to just...
An odd gummy deposit? Dude.
You know my cases. It's got the greatest descriptions of things.
So awful.
Pungent mist coming from the odd gummy deposits everywhere. And these were subsequently attributed by the UFO enthusiast groups as evidence of the saucer landing. So this was some sort of goo left by from a UFO or something.
Just lube.
Skid marks. Classic aliens.
The odd gummy skid marks.
Aliens really need some OxyClean for their undies.
Where's Billy Mays? Just
underwear everywhere.
Where is he?
And with odd gummy deposits.
No, odd gummy deposits, that to me is like ectoplasm. Like ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
But then ghosts don't make skid marks.
Well, right, who are you going to call? Other people. The ghosts are making skid marks.
Yeah, they make that skid marks in other people.
You've got a conundrum. Someone called Bill Murray.
They don't make their own skid marks, is what I'm saying.
Right. Okay, moving forward. Another article. According to former news editor Holt Byrne. Love that. Holt Byrne.
Okay.
The names. I love them. The newspaper stories were carried throughout the country. Radio broadcasts were carried on large networks, and hundreds of phone calls were received from all parts of the country after they had aired the story. The National Press Services rated the story number 11 for the year, which in 1952, God, I wonder what the top 10 must have been rough to break into the top 10 in 1952. I think that's when the war ended. Or like World War II was
in
around
1952?
Then,
No. Yeah. 1952. No, World War II ended in like 1945. That was during the Korean War.
Oh, so yeah, some stuff was going on, but you know, it topped the top 100 at least.
It's wild.
Even a minister from Brooklyn, you know, a bishop himself came to question the May family and wonder, you know, what in God's name, what in tarnation be going on here in West Virginia. A Pittsburgh paper also sent reporters, but a lot of people visited to try to get the scoop on the Flatwoods Monster.
Right.
UFO and other writers like Gray Barker and Ivan T. Sanderson also arrived to investigate, and some investigators have stated that they believe the light was a meteor and the creature was a barn owl perched in a tree with shadows making it appear to be a large humanoid. Which I don't think those two things are related. I just think that those are things that aren't out of the realm of possibility.
Is it an owl?
That could have been an owl, I guess. I don't know. But why they're claiming it to humanoid? Be 10 feet tall?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Wow.
The owl would explain maybe the bright eyes, but I don't know if owls have eye shine. Huh?
I don't know if they do. I said Daniel Radcliffe, come get Hedwig. You lost her. She's been feeding. Yeah,
come get Hedwig, Daniel, please. Harry Potter. Yeah. The boy who made Officer Lemon drop his flashlight.
His flashlight. Yeah, okay, just carry on.
So some more skepticism. After investigating the case in 2000, so like this had been going on for a while. 50 years have passed, and then, you know, Joe Nickel comes out of the woodwork, and he's apparently a part of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. Wow.
Joe Nickel?
He is the original CSI.
Don't get a lot of ladies, do you, Joe?
Yeah, I don't know.
Sounds rough.
It's sad.
Imagine saying that on a date. I'm the head of the Committee of Skeptical Inquiry.
Well, no, he's just part of CSI. That's all he has to say.
Oh my God, you're right. Way cooler.
All right, ladies, inquire further if they say they're part of the CSI.
Yes.
Or gentlemen, honestly, there could be some kooky ladies out there, or whatever. Anyway, we're not going to get into specifics of who you want. Concluded that the original bright light in the sky reported by the witnesses on September 12th was most likely a meteor. I don't know how he got to that point, but and that the pulsating red light was likely an aircraft navigation or hazard beacon, and that suggested or and that the creature described by witnesses closely resembled an owl. Nickel also suggested that the witnesses' perceptions were distorted by their heightened state of anxiety. So mind playing tricks on you argument.
Yeah, but they
I'm not buying the owl.
UFO sightings.
Well, Officer Lemon did hightail it out of there. So, you know, heightened state of anxiety. Officer Lemon was not down with being in the woods searching for this. So I can kind of get a little bit of that, but also it's, I don't know.
Who knows? If all you need is a heightened state of anxiety to see this shit, then I would be hallucinating all the time. I'm always fucking on level 100.
Well, Grace, go ahead and write down your hallucinations
yes.
for next week's podcast, and you can do my notes for me.
Oh, phenomenal. Great.
Trevor's mystery is Grace's hallucinations, apparently.
We'll collaborate for the next episode.
Yeah, we can collaborate. So, Nickel's conclusions are shared by a number of other investigators, including those of the Air Force. So Nickel apparently was making some sense. The night of
Wait, that was funny. Nickel was making some sense. Did you do that on purpose?
No, I didn't mean to do that. Clearly.
Oh my Obviously. God. Obviously.
Gaslit.
Gaslighter. Fucking gaslit. Oh, you're being dramatic.
Anyway, yeah, I am clearly. Honestly, I think you can. Okay, hang on. Sidebar. I think you can make anything worse by saying obviously or clearly at the end of a sentence.
Oh yeah, it's so fucking irritating.
Yeah, clearly.
Or like when you know something and you're really excited about this fact, and you say it to someone, and they're like, "Yeah, I knew that." I'm like, "Fuck off!" That's so irritating when you're like excited. That's obviously.
I don't know what kind of. Clearly. I don't know what form of irritation that is, or if that has a name, but it should have a name.
Well, it's just a killjoy.
I don't think that's gaslighting. You're excited to share this
fact with someone. No. Gaslighting is like when...
ass.
Gaslighting is like when you... It's ass-lighting.
Ass-lighting. Ass-lighting those gummy deposits. Setting those bad boys on fire.
See, that's why you got candles. Marks. Even ass-lighting.
Flatwood monster candles.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. All right, so...
Good.
apparently... which was corroborated. I don't even know. You know what? The Air Force was down with this. The night of September 12th, there was a sighting, and there was an actual meteor that was observed across three states, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. And according to Nickel, three flashing red aircraft beacons were also visible from the area of the sighting, which could account for the descriptions of pulsating red lights and a red tint on the face of the supposed monster.
What are aircraft beacons? What does that mean?
Like, you know, if it's a clear night and you look out and there's no clouds, you can kind of see like airplanes flying over with their flashing lights.
Oh, that's what you mean?
Yeah.
So just airplane lights?
Airplane lights, you know, that designate, hey, there's an airplane flying around and you slowly see it go across the sky.
Yeah.
That's what they're thinking about. But I don't know what airplane lights that bright, but I don't know. If there was a meteor that actually flew over, then maybe there was like Air Force conducting operations to find it or something. I don't know.
I'm on board. I got it.
Nickel concluded that the shape, movement, and sounds reported by the witnesses were also consistent with the silhouette, flight pattern, and the call of a startled barn owl perched on a tree limb.
What?
And that led them to conclude that, like, the foliage, meaning, like, the, you know, roughage, you know, like, all the lettuce and shit, beneath the owls may have created the illusion of the lower portions of the creature, described as being a pleated green skirt.
Weird.
Researchers also concluded that the witnesses' inability to agree on whether the creature had arms... combined with like May's report of having like small claw-like hands, which extended in front of it, kind of also matched the description of a barn owl with its talons gripping a tree branch. So whether it, you know, didn't have arms or did have arms, they could have been making it up. But if it didn't have arms, it kind of you know, match description of the barn owl, as well as, like, if it had small claw-like hands, then it's, like, well, it could have been its talons holding itself up.
Honestly, the those one thing I'll say about...
those are small claw-like hands, basically.
The one thing I'll say about this cryptid as opposed to others is, like, when I think of, like, the Wendigo or the Chupacabra, like, there are so... the sightings of what this monster looks like are so vastly different, even with Mothman. Right. Whereas this sighting, like, all three of these pictures you have on the drive pretty much look the same.
Yeah, so this one's kind of like a...
similar, but...
yeah, it's like a one and done. Like, this happened once, and there's not, like, multiple Bigfoot sightings, and, like, Loch Ness Monster, like, they've got multiple fake photos and stuff. And...
you mean there's only been one sighting of this thing? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Oh!
So it's kind of like a local legend as well.
I gotcha.
Of like that faded night, 1952.
Do you mean when you say there's only one sighting, it was just Officer Lemon in the maze? Or is this like there was one time that it appeared and multiple people saw it?
Yeah, so people reported that they had seen it, but this was the like firsthand account.
Oh, okay, I see. So this was just like an unusual occurrence that no one really.
And it's more of a legend because, I mean, you may see it today, but.
Yeah.
It's just not as much of a sensational legend. Like, people don't go Flatwood monster hunting.
I gotcha. Okay.
As much as they do, like, Bigfoot hunting.
Yeah.
According to a skeptic, Ryan Haupt, even though a local boy, Max Lockhart, admitted he had driven around the site hoping to see something in his Chevy truck, paranormal investigators concluded that the tracks, oily residue, and bits of rubbery substance must have been left by the creature and not the truck. So even though there was a truck on the scene, the gummy, what was it, gummy deposits?
Yeah.
Or something like
that? Yeah.
Even though there was those things, it wasn't like anything from the Chevy. And the tracks apparently had to have been made by something else. Haupt explains nausea reported by some of the witnesses as a symptom consistent with hysteria and overexertion.
Right, and also the pungent mist.
Yeah, pungent mist. Right. And dropping the flashlight, he just was so scared he threw up. I don't know. Officials in Flatwood
the skid marks, the pungent mist, the everything will make you nauseated. Like, I get.
Right. And basically where we hang our hats here is it's probably it can all be explained through natural things or people letting their eyes play tricks on them. But honestly, the Flatwood monster's kind of cool, looking like the Ace of Spades. It's got his hood up.
I don't think glowing it's a fucking green owl. Eyes. What the hell?
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Watch your back if you're in Appalachia, you know, walking at night. Big rip time.
Trevor's dad is going to run after you in the woods.
Yeah, it's either the Flatwoods monster Bigfoot or it's just my dad just sprinting through the trees. making primate noises. Which, honestly, I think would be more terrifying. Like, if my dad just went rogue, and I'm like, Dad, it's me! Dad, it's me! And he's just like, oh!
Your dad has eye shine.
Swinging through the tree. I see some glowing eyes in the distance, and I shine my flashlight on it, and it's just my dad squatting on top of a giant rock. And I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? Don't kill me, Dad.
Oh my god, call your dad.
Call your dad, girlfriends, to make sure he doesn't turn into a feral animal in the woods.
Yes.
Yes. According...
that sounded like...
I know. According to... we don't have to talk about it anymore. Okay. According to officials in Flatwood, they erected a welcome sign, which designated the town as Home of the Green Monster.
Good.
Which, I've never heard it called the Green Monster, but apparently the Flatwoods monster is the Green Monster. The town also commemorates the legend in its annual Flatwood Days Festival.
Oh.
Located in the town of Sutton, the Braxton County seat, there's also a Flatwoods Monster Museum, which is dedicated to the legend. So we should definitely go. The Braxton County Convention and Visitors Bureau also built a series of 5 tall chairs in the shape of the monster to serve as landmarks and visitor attractions, which you saw one of those on the drive. So they had a couple of cool stuff. The Bureau also rewards visitors who photograph all five chairs with a free Brexy or Braxy sticker. Kind of like free.
Are they like, oh, a sticker. I was like, are they
like
hitting
in quotes something? Free oh, Braxy, as in like it's yeah. in prison. I don't know what it did, but hopefully it's just tax evasion or some shit. I don't know. Or it may end up in one of your cases.
Yeah, no, like Shakira.
Yeah. Exactly that? Like Shakira is the Flatwoods Monster.
Did she get a...
Yeah, you know what would be sad or scary? Just hearing out of context Shakira noises in the middle of the woods.
You just hear like... Just, you know how like cars, they go zoom, like.
Yeah. You hear a twig snap behind you, like 20 feet out, and it's just like a soft Shakira noise. And then another twig snap in front of you, and it's just another one, and you just realize
soft
that you're.
Shakira noise? Oh my God, I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Oh. That's probably
that's a good
creepy
band
thing
name.
It's honestly Shakira a great movie. It's a great movie idea. Yeah, it just echoes through the forest softly.
I love it.
But yeah, okay, so if you want to know more about it, the creature was the subject of a 2018 documentary, The Flatwoods Monster, A Legacy of Fear, which was produced by like an indie production company, whatever. But I thought the name was funny. But also you can find it on like the History Channel. So that,
starring
I just
Steve
thought
Carell.
It was cool. The Flatwoods Monster, A Legacy of Fear. Just terrifying. But that's all I got. It was a little short one,
wow.
But I thought the Flatwoods Monster was like too weird looking to not cover.
That was a fun one. I definitely want to try that, go to that museum. I think that'd be a fun little road trip.
It'd be pretty sweet.
And we've also got to go to, isn't Scarlett's Amusement Park, isn't that in West Virginia?
I think so. I don't think I want to go there, really. Like, I'd rather go to Carowinds
the amusement
or like
park
Six Flags or something.
Grandpa's Grundle.
No, I'm all right. I don't need more stinky pawpaws in my life.
I don't need any, actually. You can keep your stink.
I think you do. I think you need a stinky pawpaw with nice gummy deposits and then live the rest of your days.
Met my quota.
Keep your stink.
Trev needs more, apparently. Keep your stink.
No.
Call your dad.
I'm good. Call your dad.
Stay slippery. I think we said that in a few episodes ago.
Stay slippery.
Listen, wash your grundles.
Yeah. Keep it slippery, Eagle friends. You can email us at wheremurdermeetsmystery@gmail.com. Send us any feedback for the episode. Give us episode ideas if you want to hear us cover something, as well as ask us questions. I don't know. Let's interact. Let's talk it up. Also, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or any other reviews on any other podcast site that you find us on. Those will help us grow this little Eagle friend family of ours. And
yeah.
I'm happy that every single one of you choose to listen to at least one of these, which is awesome.
That's so cool. Also, make sure that you follow us on Instagram, where I post now on a semi-regular basis, at Where Murder Meets History, and send us a DM. Tell Trevor he's funny, and we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear
and if you
want to
let your golf friend flag fly, then share us on Instagram or something like that.
Yes.
That's something you do. I don't have Instagram
also,
again, so I don't know if that's
the thing. Trevor doesn't have Instagram.
Whatever. I'll take any compliments as long as it's appropriate. So
no, send us a DM at Where Murder Meets Mystery, and we will talk at you next week with more murder and mayhem and mystery and meteors and
mayos, which is chaos
and
with an
hot, pungent grundles.
Yes, fanfic starters, writing prompts for you guys.
Yes.
But yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
Call
Officer
Lemon.
Yeah. Officer Lemon.
Yeah.
But we'll holler at you next week, girlfriends. Stay slippery.
Yes. We love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.